This is part three of a three-part podcast. So we got new folks for the teepee.
Right.
Emily and Tony have wanderlust. They're going to go on a big bike trip, and they're currently visiting Canada, and they've got all kinds of new adventure plans lined up, and there's a new couple that will be moving into the teepee in October. And so there's Emily and Tony are preparing the teepee for the new couple, and so that's a little bit of news. This next item is an enormous topic, and really this is the poster child for our problems here, and
our community problems.
And so it's like it's such a simple thing. And it's like, you know, as much as, like, I think that the amount of drama that we have here is 1/100th of the drama that happens at other communities. And other communities that I've been in, other communities that I've visited, other communities I've asked to come and help mediate problems, things of that nature. I mean, so other communities, I think we have just hardly any drama compared to that. And then at the same time, it's like we've got... We had an issue of dysfunction, and it took for it to get to the point that people were yelling at each other for us to kind of look at it and say, you know, the problem is not what is obvious. The problem is a much bigger problem. So let me describe it, and that is we call it the pig bucket. And so when Tim and Christy arrived, they brought with them some pigs. And so immediately what we did is that any of the kitchen scraps, rather than putting into a compost bucket, we just called the bucket a pig bucket instead, with the idea that we're going to take it up and feed it to the pigs. And right from the very beginning, it turned out to be riddled with problems. The bucket wasn't finding its way up to the pigs. And then it would get nasty. And then it's like, you can't feed this to pigs. And so then we would, you know, start a compost pile. And it's like, that seemed like such a waste. It would be far better used to go to the pigs. It just needs to be taken up there promptly. And we've got so many people going back and forth between base camp and the lab, you know, probably 15 trips a day. Surely somebody can take it up. And so people would swear, I'll do it. I'll make sure it's up there every day promptly. Yeah. And what they meant to say is I'll tell you I'll do it, and then I won't ever touch that bucket.
Then I'll forget.
I'll forget. Because, okay, I thought you were going to take it up. Oh, right. Yeah, I was going to do that, wasn't I? Oh, well. And it was just this it became this horrible chore and this point of contention and conflict. And it's like, you know, why would you commit to that and not actually do it? Not only not do it every day for the last 2 weeks, but never.
Well, and there were a bunch of other little nuances to it. The buckets would go, but they wouldn't come back, or the buckets were, you know, where do you put the buckets? Who actually gives the food to the pigs? And where all these layers of, well, only Tim and Christy should ever feed the pigs. So then, you know, and you're living off grid, and you've got dogs and other wildlife around. Where do you put a bucket full of food, you know, when any critter could get in it if it's not kept somewhere out of the way? You know, there just became it, stuff.
There got to be stuff. And yeah. And the there was a day where a person who was new was helpful, took the bucket up, had a bucket for the pigs, saw the pigs, saw a bowl in the pig area, and then connected all the dots. I will put the pig food into the pig bowl.
Right.
And there will be rejoicing.
Yeah, the pigs will be happy. I get to feed the pigs. I'm happy.
They will sing me their little piggy song.
Yeah. Yeah.
People will gather around and praise me.
It just
all seemed, is glorious.
It just seemed that logical and simple. Yeah.
And but what they did not know is that that's not the thing to do.
And there had been a long history. There had been a long history of problems and troubles with the pig bucket that they didn't
know. And so the thing is the pigs, the pig bucket. You don't feed the pigs. You set the pig bucket near the pigs, and that a person will find it and then feed it to them in the appropriate fashion at the appropriate time, as they're trying to solve other pig problems. And so there's a little bit more to it, but it's like, no, this was probably the sixth time that this has happened. And so finally it's like there was some words exchanged that were not the rejoicing and the praising and the singing of songs and that kind of thing. And it's like, so the bottom line was, as Tim said, don't send the food up. Just don't.
We don't want it anymore.
Stop.
Too many problems.
And so the bottom line is like, you know, we're so hell-bent on these huge, huge projects to change the world and prove things and cure cancer and all this stuff. How can we do those things when we can't even get a fucking pig bucket to the pigs? Every point that everybody makes on this whole thing is perfectly reasonable. Oh, I forgot. Which, to me, whenever I hear, oh, I forgot, what that really means is, I don't give a shit. I don't care. You know, because if a person is, like, passionate about it and they care, then they will never forget. But so what I hear is, oh, I don't care. I like to get the praise when I say I'll do this thing and you don't have to worry about it. I love that feeling of, like, I've solved the problem, but I don't want to actually do the work. That's like annoying. So we had people that were willing to do the work, but they didn't have all the backstory and all the information. And then, of course, you know, there's people who are trying to solve little problems. So it's like, okay, this is our poster child for the thing that, and this was about 2 months ago. Was it?
July. Right? It was the first part of July.
So it's kind of like, I kind of felt like we need to grasp this. We need to own this. We need to fix it through and through. Now, granted, and I don't think we should even attempt to take a pig bucket up for a year. I mean, we've got to be able to prove that we can handle a fucking pig bucket first. We've got to earn the ability to earn the responsibility to be able to just simply to do a task so simple. So we've put a lot of time into analysis on, okay, what went wrong? How could it turn into this monstrosity? And so one of the things is it's like, okay, well, how could we have possibly solved it so that it never turned out to be this drama? You got a brand new person, and they want to help. They want to take the pig bucket up. And then they could, and so what happens? How could they have known? How could they have been aware that the thing to do is to not feed it to the pigs, but to... So now what we're doing with projects all over the laboratories is we're putting labels on everything. We've just bought mountains and mountains of this label stuff. And it's like we're just... Now, in fact, one of the bad boy buggies, you get into it, and there's like six labels on the inside talking about different things, you know.
About the emergency brake and things like that. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and just having people here who've been here a few months helps a lot, because even in the kitchen, you know, I'm not in the bad boy buggy very often, but even in the kitchen, I've had, you know, Richard saying, oh, well, you know, this is how you could clean out cast iron, or somebody else will speak up and help the new people that are coming through. Well, this is how you do that. Even when there aren't labels, but yeah.
So if we have 8 people who've been here 2 years or longer, and then we've got 4 people that have been here only 2 weeks, or in the case of what happened, I think that person only been here like 3 or 4 days. Then it's like, yeah, you're right. Having people here long term is really going to help. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying only long-term people, but having more people that have been here very long-term is going to really make a big difference.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I think labeling everything. So if there was a label on the pig bucket that gave directions on where the pig bucket goes, plus the label would indicate This is a pig bucket. It goes, when it's empty, it goes to base camp. You know, and when it's full, it needs to go to, I don't know, a table next to the pig area. Don't feed directly to the pigs.
Yeah.
Something like that. Just labels on things would have made an enormous difference.
True.
And probably would have saved hours of grief from all sorts of different parties who are trying to, like, you know, who, yeah. I mean, because I think it's no, there was nobody at fault. Nobody came out and did anything nefarious.
Right. Oh,
there was no wickedness anywhere.
Yeah.
But there was frustration to the point of, like, you know, ah, how many times do I have to say this? You know, and it's kind of like, okay, reasonable. You know, frustrating. We got to solve this, and we're not getting it solved. And no amount of yelling is fixing it. And it's such a simple, simple, simple thing. All right. So I guess the thing is that it's good to express that the pig bucket, and I keep calling it the pig bucket problem. Every once in a while, somebody will bring up an issue, and I'll say, it's a pig bucket problem. Well, there's no pig bucket involved. I know. But the pig bucket's the poster child. It's the same problem. And usually the solutions are the same. We need to have more people that are here very long term, years, and we need to label the crap out of it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different factors there. So a lot of that we're still working with in the house on household management. We have a little tiny double wide, out of which an average of 15 people are living. So we have a living room space, dining room space, kitchen space, hall bathroom, utility room for the washing machine that 15 different people are using on average. And so it's a combination of factors. It's a combination of setting a precedent, like, okay, well, this is what the kitchen looks like on a day-to-day basis. We, you know, the dining room table is completely cleared off when people are done or when a meal's done, you know, because then somebody could play poker there. You know, there's a precedent. There's all kinds of, besides the signs and labels, there's also documents and documentation and orientation documents. And we have those in a variety of way, printed online in different formats. And we have meetings. We have, you know, we talk about different issues whenever they need to be announced, you know. But the meetings are more project-based. They're not so much meetings on this kind of stuff. But,
oh, yeah, we don't have any, like, regular meeting of, like...
No.
Because, like, a lot of communities will say, like, oh, we have to meet every Tuesday night at 7 to talk about all our shit.
Yeah, we don't do that. It's more project and project-based meetings. But if there's something like we had an issue with the sprouts in the kitchen, people kept setting the sprout jar up to where the sprouts in the bottom were rotting. You know, you got to put the sprout jar on its side and let it drain out the mesh at the top. And so we just had a little announcement. Hey, if you see this, I know you're trying to help by setting it upright, but really these jars don't sit upright.
That jar could use a label.
It could. It could. Yeah. And we did an announcement. Yeah. We should do a label.
Yeah.
True.
It sounds like a pig bucket problem.
Leave me on my side. I like to be sideways. Yeah. So there, yeah, we're working on it and we're getting better and better and better with those systems and those orientations. And, you know, some people are going to read documentation. Some people aren't. Some people are going to read labels. Some people aren't. So we have it.
But if there's a discussion, if anybody's going to try and say, you know, well, I didn't know, how could we make you know? It's in a big, bright label on the container you're holding in your hand.
Right.
What more could we do? Frankly, yeah, yeah. My impression is that everybody's reading all the labels. I don't think there's anything like, oh, people are... I think there's one person here who might read the label and then decide that they didn't know what they were talking about. And, you know, but that's the worst of it. And and so I think that for the most part, we're getting a lot of shared velocity, a lot of common direction. The labels are working. The labels are awesome.
Yeah.
And now we got a lot of people also that are like committed to being here like forever-ish.
Yeah. And a lot of... amazing, just positive attitude and happy compliance with, oh, yeah, I'll do that, or, oh, yeah, let's do that, or, oh, yeah, how do we do that? And, you know, let's just keep it rolling. So that's, there has been a lot of that.
I think a great thing is that we had one guy here who had only been here like a few days, and he just started poisoning the well. So he just started, like, you know, bitching and whining about everything. And along the way, there were two other guys that had been here not very long, and they started to be like, yeah, this place is shit. This place sucks. In the meantime, they tried to poison some of the others, and some of the others were like, nope, it's great. And so those three guys left. They're gone, and all these other guys are still here.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think it's such a powerful positive that it's like they can't be poisoned. They're immune to your poison.
Yeah. Well, those three guys, it seemed like the main criticism they had is we didn't have food systems yet. And it was kind of like, have you been following what we're doing? Do you know what we're doing? Yeah. Do you know why we don't want food systems yet? I mean, we don't want to have chickens and just buy them crappy grain. We want to have good browse for chickens. We want to have good browse and forage for other animals here. And we're all here focused at base camp. You know, we're not up on the lab where there is more browse and forage like Tim and Christy and their family and their animals are. So it was really kind of really. And we're, yeah. So it was just surprising that they didn't know we have instant food systems. Instant.
These guys, none of them had, they'd listen to maybe a handful of podcasts.
And they didn't.
Zero podcasts.
Yeah, and they didn't know your ideas of starting everything from seed instead of buying all these trees and planting them and irrigating them. You know, they didn't know a lot of your goals for what you want to demonstrate with food systems. So
it's, I think my philosophies must seem crazy to people like that. And so they were, you know, it wasn't a fit.
Yeah.
And whereas the people who listen to all the podcasts, then my ideas don't seem crazy. And so, you know, which is why they're here to exercise these. So, all right, next one. Oh, here, we got some good news. Sepp Holzer's grain. We have 41 grains. And Richard is like, okay, so we want to plant them here. We're worried that the deer would eat it. Like, we plant the grains and then whatever comes up, the deer just, you know, rips it out and eats it. And we're also worried that the turkeys might do it. Cause last year we had 100 turkeys doing laps around the house.
Oh yeah. We were feeding them out back. We were encouraging them even.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Talking to them even.
Yeah.
So, Richard put together kind of a grain cage.
Uh-huh.
So there's this place where, and he planted 21 of the seeds, and he had a 100% germination rate.
Woohoo! Richard.
Yeah. So they're up. They're about, you know, 5 inches tall right now, and we'll plant the rest of them in the spring. And very excited to have Holzer's, you know, grain here that he calls it Russian corn. It's actually a perennial rye, but we've got it set up to protect it from, so originally it was like barbed wire all the way around.
There's a thread for that.
There is a thread for that. Complete with pictures.
Yeah, you'll see Richard.
We've got a hay box cooker all set up. Sam made a very nice hay box cooker. He originally made it so the insulative material was hay, which makes it, the thing I have to point out is, like, hay box cooker, the name hay box is a terrible name because you should never put hay in it.
Yeah.
You could put straw in it. Straw is fine. And you've done them before with just towels in a box.
Yeah.
And so Sam made a lovely wooden box, and then he lined the inside with foil, and now it is wool.
Yeah. There was a lovely gal who brought us, who gave us a bunch of free wool, which was really an awesome gift. It's beautiful wool. I keep thinking, wow, I wish I did fiber arts. And the hay box cooker had been tucked away in the garage. Nobody had tried it. And then when Jesse and Carol Ann were here, Carol Ann tried it. And unfortunately, they were chickpeas that were just didn't want to soften up. Somebody else tried to cook some of those chickpeas and had to boil them for like 6 hours, and they still barely softened up. So I think the problem was the chickpeas, not so much the hay box cooker.
Okay.
And now Sam has optimized it, so it's right. We have a porch just outside the kitchen and utility room, and he put it on stilts so you can reach it very easily from the back porch. So you can just step out the kitchen, set it in the hay box cooker, and let it go. Rebecca and Bella, this little sidebar, brought a solar oven with them, and they use that a few times since we've been here. So that's been awesome too.
Back when we had some real sunny days. Right now it's kind of rainy.
Yeah.
All right. The next thing is we're looking at purchasing an observation journal, and we found some stuff that's very, very pretty.
Yes.
And expensive.
With pretty prices to go with
and
it.
It's like $100 for this journal. And it's kind of like, but it's got this leather tree thing on the cover. It's just so amazing. And so I haven't gotten up the nerve yet to actually spend $100 on a journal. But it's like, you know, the mission is art and aesthetics right now. Oh, and by the way, we're talking about art and aesthetics. We're listing off some of the things we've done so far, or we're currently exploring. And I guess the point I want to drive home is that I feel like that for the next year and a half, we're going to do a lot with art and aesthetics, and that's going to have a far more prominent role in everything that we do. And I don't know what that means. In fact, I think it's wrong to try to know what that means. It's going to depend on each artist and where are they going to come from. I don't know that either. I mean, right now we've got Rebecca and Bella here, and then they're just full of ideas, but they're only here for a short while.
Well, and even the shelves that Sam built in the kitchen have improved the look of the kitchen dramatically. And as we hang more and more herbs in the kitchen, I think that improves the look of it. And then now Jason built a little spice shelf, you know, and we've got our spices more organized. You know, all of these little things do make improvements. But getting back to the observation journal, I did start a thread on that too and posted it out at Facebook, and I had some interesting feedback. So Rebecca Holman likes to use Evernote for her garden journaling because she'll snap a picture and then put it in with her notes in and organize it in this little tech thing on her smartphone. And then somebody else said that out at the thread on Permies. Oh, I just, you know, make notes in an app or something, you know. And I think the goal of the observation journal is something you experienced in a PDC, is where you sit and you observe and you write. And I know if I'm using Evernote on my smartphone, I'm going to text my kids. I'm going to check my emails. I'm going to, you know, text, oh, yeah, oh, hey, Sam or Paul. Or, you know, I'm not going to just sit and observe like you do with a real piece of paper and a pencil or a pen. So I think there's value to that. And I know a lot of people who are into either permaculture and the, you know, observe. Sepp says, you know, watch nature, learn from nature all the time. But a lot of people who do a lot of wilderness training or that traditional ecological knowledge, they want to have a sit spot. And they go to their special spot and they sit there either daily, weekly, whatever, and they sit there and observe. That's what they do. They observe the plants, the wildlife, the weather, they just observe.
So I think that the key is that, your points are all really good, especially the point about don't take a fucking cell phone with you. and it's like, don't take a pad, don't take a laptop, don't take a book. You know, don't make...
You mean an iPad? A notepad would be okay.
Oh, no. I mean, the idea is to take the journal.
Right, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
And so then the idea would be is that in about 45 minutes, you need to write down... You need to go find a spot that's a ways away from the house, and it'll be totally quiet. You're not going to hear anybody. And you need to sit down and spend about 45 minutes... And then just write down every detail of everything that you can see. And it's going to be like, what plants can you see and identify? And maybe there's plants that you can't identify. You know, maybe you see a bug. What kind of bug do you see? What does the bug look like? Do you know the name of the bug? Or if you do, if you know it, write it down. If you don't, then just describe it. What's in bloom right now? What do you see that's in bloom? What does the soil look like? What do the rocks look like? You know, are the leaves, what do the leaves on whatever look like? You know, so basically, and you would think that it's like, you know what, in 4 minutes you'd be done. That's all there is to see. But this is what I learned. I thought for sure when we were doing this that it was stupid. And it's like, what? A waste of time. I could go check my email or something. So we go out and we do this, and it's about 7 or 8 minutes into it that I start to just really fill out the page. And I'm starting to notice things that I had never noticed before and I would not have thought to notice.
Right.
And, I started to notice, like, is that a mushroom? You know, and what kind of mushroom is it? And then you can try to, and I'm a very poor drawer artist. I'm a very poor, was drawer the right word? I think I don't draw well. And so, but I tried and it didn't, you know, wasn't too terribly bad. But then,
you drew the Mythbusters guys pretty well in your little, light bulb stuff.
That's right. Yeah, I think I did all right.
They were funny.
And I did a self-portrait. Did you see my self-portrait?
That too.
I think I did a pretty good job.
Yeah, that was funny.
So I just started, and then there was sounds. And then I could kind of talk about what the weather is like today. And I don't know, the details just started to come to life.
Yeah.
And that is what I wrote. And in fact, when the time was up, then it's like, no, I've got more to write here. You know, I'm not done.
Yeah.
But the big thing is that, when pulled away from it, then I realized that somehow I had become kind of intertwined more in the realness of the moment, the realness of the world. I can't really describe this, but it was an extremely good thing. And it's something that I have never experienced since, nor before. And at the same time, it's of great use and value to have a journal like that. But mostly, I can kind of see that if you hand the journal to somebody and you confiscate their phone and you say, I want you to go up on the volcano to the meow, meow, meow point, which hasn't been named yet, and sit there for 45 minutes and on a single page, you're not allowed to go beyond a single page, document everything you see from that spot. Do not get up. Don't wander around. Stay in that spot. Because that kind of forces you to start to notice the details, the teeny tiny things that are right there. Whereas if you wander around, you're going to keep trying to find a better spot. So it just seems like that would be for that individual that went, that was ordered to do that without their cell phone, mm-hmm. that it would be of enormous benefit to them, which I believe they would not see the value in it until they were required to do it.
I'm imagining all the people. There's a lot of people interested in your stuff that also enjoy homeschooling their kids. And I can imagine a lot of them going, okay, homeschool assignment. Awesome.
I don't think you should assign it to your kids until you've done it yourself.
Huh, good point.
So I don't think you should assign it to anybody until you've done it yourself.
Good
all right,
point.
Next thing on the list. When does Chef Seth get here? Is it the 8th?
The 8th. And yeah, there are two things we plan on doing or hope to do with Chef Seth that I'm still working out last-minute details on. It'll be last-minute stuff. And like you said, we're not doing formal workshops because September's already a crazy busy month. But we're looking at a potluck dinner to kick things off, to talk about the concepts of a permaculture kitchen. There's a very rich thread on that. There's a thread for that where Seth has just brought in all these concepts and ideas and things. And we met a farmer just the other day who wants to talk about cooking Scottish Highland cattle beef because he's had to teach people how to cook it because it's different. And he's very excited about all these principles that Chef Seth wants to work with us. And the other thing we're looking at is revisiting some pork butchery again. Chef Seth does a community pork butchery class down in the Bay Area, and we want to get some pork for the workshops, and maybe we'll get enough for the winter too. We're going to have so many people here, I think we'll go burn through a lot of food. But and there's a lot of people here interested in doing that, so we might have some local friends join us in a very casual, open way for that potluck dinner and for the butchery.
You were asking me this like an hour ago, by the way, and before I forget, you were asking how many people are we going to have this winter, and we were doing
not just this winter. That was more about gappers in general, gappers for this each summer and for the winter.
Okay.
And I know the winter is housing dependent.
So yeah, and it sounds like we might actually have room for a couple more.
And this winter.
This winter. And I'm not sure how many people would be actually interested in it, but it does seem like, you know, a couple of new people a month. And then, you know.
Well, we have another couple interested in coming, too.
Right. So, but it's kind of like, I kind of thought that with Wolfati 0.4, once Tim and his family moved to Wolfati 0.8.
0.4?
Did I say 0.4?
Again.
I keep thinking about the four. It's 400 square feet.
Ah, that's where the four comes from.
Yeah.
0.7. Yeah, the 0.7. First Wolfati.
Yeah, 0.7. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, it's got three bunks in it right now and another room that's designed to be in another bedroom. And so it's like, so that would be at least four, I would think. And, you know, so... And currently, we've only got one person lined up for sure to be in it. I thought Jesse and Carol Ann would be coming back, and that they would. But I haven't heard anything from them. But anyway, yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's possible that there might be more rooms. But Chef Seth, how long is he going to be here? September 8th to
The 30th. So this is Seth Peterson. He cooked for us at the Permaculture Voices Conference. We had a house of 20, the Permies house, and he agreed to do a bunch of cooking there, which was awesome. And he coordinated a lot of the food and people helping. So we ate well while being, you know, at a conference. And he teaches all kinds of food preservation and fermentation and butchery and knife skills and all of that kind of stuff through a kind of urban homestead education center place in the Bay Area. And he's very involved with other levels of food issues that include food policy, legalities, and money systems and all of that. So, and some of that are not so much what you and I might go into, but Seth is all about those. So he has a very, very broad, all-encompassing view of a permaculture kitchen. He would love, he said there is a book out called The Permaculture Kitchen, but he said it's mostly recipes. I'm not sure. I haven't tried to look that up, and I might have some of that a little bit off.
So his idea of permaculture kitchen has more to do with the philosophies.
It has a lot more to do. It has to do with, you know, how you're designing your farm-to-table stuff, whether it's your own farm, whether it's extended community farm, how you make the kitchen work for people and work for your energy systems and work for, you know, all of the different permaculture design stuff you'd look into. You know, how are you, you know, using surpluses? You know, how are you being as sustainable as possible? So all of that. So he would love to start building fodder for a book or a DVD. And so some of this I haven't even talked to you much about yet, Paul. So some of this might be new to you because, you know, I've been trying to take care of it and not burden you as you're doing your stuff. So there's a lot going on there. You had a lot of conversations and posts. You started the Permaculture Kitchen thread, so you've had your own thoughts in that space too.
And I want to thank all the people who've been giving me a lot of space during all, because it's kind of like a lot of people have been giving me room here at the at laboratories, and you know, not bugging me with stuff in order so I can get caught up. And then I think a lot of the online people have been giving me some room too. So I am feeling a little more caught up. I mean, Email River is still hopelessly behind, but at the same time, it's like I'm making a little headway.
Yeah. So you felt like making a podcast, which was new and different.
I haven't made a podcast in so long, but
you surprised me.
But the other thing is, like with Chef Seth coming here, it's kind of funny. We put out the thing about who wants to come to the Rocket Mass Eater workshop, and then we sold like 4 tickets. And then we sold, we ended up selling them all. And then once we sold, like we're getting down to the last couple of spots available for the Rocket, and we announced, and by the way, we got the official word. It was hinted before, but we got the official word. Willie Smits will be here for the Rocket Mass Eater workshop. And so then I think 4,000 people all wanted to come.
Too late, sucker.
And so Willie Smits will be here.
Yeah.
And so Chef Seth will have the opportunity to, I don't know, maybe create one meal or two. Because Chef Seth also wants to take the Rocket Mass Eater workshop.
We don't have him. We're not expecting him to cook during the workshop, although, of course, you know, if he wants to, that would be really awesome. But, you know, we're trying to arrange it so he, you know, is able to work with us and help optimize our permaculture kitchen systems before the workshop, and then he can fully participate in the workshop and the innovators gathering, which he's very excited to do. So that's Chef Seth.
Yeah. Right. So Chef Seth or Oliver will be our cook during the workshop.
Yeah.
So you should expect your food to be spicy.
Which is awesome. It's been so fun. We had some crazy, crazy bland food, but for some time. And I cook really bland. You know, I was always the fill-in cook. So it's been really fun to have Oliver and his spicy stuff.
It was as big one as Cajun chicken or gumbo. We'll have gumbo.
Jamaican jerk chicken.
Jamaican jerk chicken? Okay.
Yeah, is what he does. And gumbo, he's really excited to make his gumbo for Chef Seth.
Okay.
Because he learned how to make that in New Orleans. You know, it's real, the real McCoy. And so we have had, so we announced that Oliver plans to leave us. And so we were looking for a new kitchen commander, and we haven't had a lot of response to that still. And now we're kind of shifting things around, and we've had Rebecca and Bella helping, and then we have some other guys here who want to you know, do some cooking here and there. So that is shifting and changing a lot too. So we kind of are looking forward to talking with Chef Seth some more on his ideas about that, because he's worked in a lot of kitchens and restaurants, and it'll be interesting to get his feedback. In fact, his first feedback was that what you've been calling crappy pay, when you, you know, include in the other benefits of living here, he didn't think it was very crappy pay at all for the type of kitchen work that was being done. So that was interesting feedback right off the bat from phone conversations I've had with Seth.
I think it would be cool to have somebody be the kitchen commander and they listen to all the podcasts. That would be cool.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I kind of feel like it seems like we've met a lot of people that are bonkers about the podcasts. Yeah. And they've said something like, boy, I really want to get out of the rat race.
Yeah.
And they're financially able to get out of the rat race. But it's like, where would they go? What would they do?
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that, you know, and mostly what I'm thinking about is it's like it seems like at one presentation, there's one woman in particular I keep thinking of, but
right.
But it's like there hasn't been just one woman. There's been like a dozen.
Yeah.
And they were all women. They were all women who are like, you know, 45, 50. And it's like, I just want to stop doing what I'm doing. I'm sick of it. I'm just so sick of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you're living in the city in a pollution pit and, you know, driving to work 5 days a week. And it's, you know, and then the food that you buy at the store is, you know, that even though it's labeled organic, that they've hosed it down with toxic gick in order to be able, like I love the little video of the little girl.
And the sweet potatoes.
And she's like, here it is. It's organic and it's still pathetic, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, here it is when it hasn't been sprayed with anything.
Yeah.
And poof, big shrub.
Yeah.
So, I kind of feel like, where are they? What happened to them? Maybe they don't listen to the podcast. Maybe they just go to my presentations, but they don't listen to the podcast.
I don't know. That's another item on the list where we had 12 single guys in their 20s here kind of earlier this summer. And then just recently, before Rebecca and Bella came, it was me and 8 guys. You know, because Tony and Emily were kind of doing some other things, weren't around so much.
You don't want to count Christy?
Well, and we don't do a lot with Tim and Christy and their families. But what I'm thinking of when I sit down at the table here at base camp, it was me and 8 guys, 3 meals a day.
Yeah, you know? That's true.
And, you know, the conversations are just very different. They're fun and nice, but I was so missing talking to other women. And we had a lot of lonely guys that wanted available women. Right,
right. A couple of the guys were hitting the online stuff for dating sites or something.
Yep. And one had a great date idea. Let's go pick huckleberries together, which was neat. But anyway, so we've done a lot of brainstorming what would bring more women in, whether it's a woman in the kitchen commander position, whether it's a woman as a gapper. And we're just, you know, so many construction projects. We need more food system projects, more kitchen projects, more food preservation projects. And that sounds very, very sexist, but I think that would bring more women. So, and you know, there are women that enjoy the construction stuff too. There really are. And I don't want to, impose gender roles on anybody. I would never want to do that. But it's just kind of what we've experienced here. A lot of guys. And it has been really fun to see a lot of different interpretations in the kitchen. You know, like you said, Oliver likes the spicy. He also loves to make homemade bread. And he's really been making that KitchenAid sing to churn out bread dough and all kinds of bread, pizza crust and dough boy, he's done pita pockets for when we have curries. He's done. And then we've had Jesse and Carol Ann, and they're vegetarian, and Carol Ann would just make the salad sing. She just loved to make vegetables happy. And did a lot of things with tahini and peanut butter. And now Rebecca and Bella, you know, really enjoy doing things with peanut sauces and vegetables and curries. And so it's been very fun to have a lot of different interpretations of what to do in the kitchen. And then we're trying to do more fermentation and other food preservation. Right now we've just been freezing huckleberries, but it would be lovely to, you know, mix, you know, can or dry things. That's something else the guys want to build us is a solar food dehydrator. We mm-hmm. haven't built one of those yet, but that is all has to do with the permaculture kitchen stuff.
I kind of feel like in the future there'll be probably more women here than men. But right, right now it's such a construction phase.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's the guys. It's the guys that come.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, now we're starting to move into the next phase, and I think we'll see a lot more women come out.
Yeah. Well, and the other things we put on the list along with the whole permaculture kitchen concept or just base camp is we do wildcraft some different herbs. You know, we have a lot of mullein drying in the kitchen. We like to keep that for tea over the winter, especially. I like to also gather the wild strawberry leaves, and I grow and dry feverfew for teas and a few other herbs and things like that. So we always have lots of dried bulk herbs and plants for teas. That's a really happy thing. We have people making mead and kombucha. There's been a lot of huckleberry mead going on this summer. And other people do kombucha. Paul and I aren't so much about the mead and kombucha.
They taste nasty. They think they're all like, ooh, oh, this is so delicious. You should try it. No, I'm not. I've tried kombucha before. I don't like kombucha. I don't like mead. I don't like alcoholic anything.
Well, kombucha isn't technically alcoholic, but there was a really nice, light, and fresh tasting one that Bella and Rebecca made. But the Justin's huckleberry mead was awesome. No wonder he's been, you know, enjoying that so much. But so there's you know, and you've got all the lists of all the other things to bring women in. Look at that.
Well, you know, and it's not necessarily to bring women in. It's interesting that you should, you know, say that, but but I wrote down a few other things that are like the things that, you know, so this year we've had the baby turkeys again. There were they're wild turkeys. Mm-hmm. And so last year, I think there were more babies than this year.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why that is. It seems like, you know, last year there were dozens and dozens of babies. This year it's like there's, what, six or seven?
I don't know. It just seemed like April hunting season for turkeys, they were just decimated. There were just few breeders left.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they were just...
We started the turkey season with like 100, ended the turkey season with like 7.
Yeah.
So
if that, I thought there were only one or two, but
we didn't take any.
I last year I loved seeing the turkeys so much. I kept trying to get photos or videos of them, and all of my photos and videos sucked. And then finally Sam got that one of two gorgeous toms just strutting their stuff, and he's posted that out to the forums. It's like, that's it. That's what I was trying to get.
So I don't know if we mentioned it in previous podcasts, but we've had a lot of calves born here this year. And there were a few puppies.
Yeah.
So Tim and Christy had a dog, River, that had puppies.
A blue heeler.
And I know that Richard and I went over some plants for hummingbirds. And so they're being ordered And so we're going to be planting a lot of, because there are, there's got to be
hummingbirds here.
Lots of hummingbirds going around all the time. And so we're going to try and get a lot of hummingbird forage planted.
And that surprised some people that we would have hummingbirds here. And the bee forage too, yes.
So a lot of bee forage has already been planted. And
isn't that knapweed?
Yeah. Knapweed is an excellent bee forage. And so yesterday I was being videoed up on the lab. And I was like, I saw knapweed, and we were like, I don't know, maybe 400 yards away from the beehive. And it's like, I was looking at a knapweed plant, and there was like four honeybees on the knapweed plant. And so it's like, they're just working it.
Yeah. It's supposed to be the best tasting honey is the knapweed honey. So, and we've had quite a bit of that from Jacob, and it has been fantastic honey. And I've had other people sample it who have finer taste buds than mine, and they've said, oh yeah, that's good honey. So, because I can't tell the difference very well. I'm not that sensitive.
No, if I were to give you like eight different kinds of honey, mm-hmm. you would be able to tell the difference.
Yeah.
So like buckwheat honey, that is kind of a harsh honey. It looks black, and it's like, you know, that has a very different flavor to it. And but a lot of the honeys that are considered very popular, it's because they have no flavor. They're flavorless. Mm-hmm. There was one kind of honey that came from Hawaii, and it was solid. Was like, you know, and it was hard to kind of chip pieces out of it, but it was amazing. And so I had this jar, which was like this tiny jar that cost $15, but it was organic, and it's like hard to chisel out pieces out of the jar in order to, but there was something about it that was just crazy delicious.
Yeah.
So the lighter honeys are considered the higher grade honeys, and mm-hmm. and so knapweed is one source for a very light and delicious honey.
Yeah.
As opposed to those honeys that are so packed with flavor that it's like you might not like it at all.
That's an aesthetic here that has improved a lot, if you ask me. Maybe aesthetic is the incorrect word, but when I walk through knapweed in mid to late summer, what happened to me last year is if my shins are exposed and I walk through knapweed, create scratches that turn awful. The knapweed just really makes my shin skin very, very sad, and I don't like it, and it itches, and they get all icky. And that was starting to happen to Justin here too. And so as the knapweed started showing itself this year, I was pulling it wherever I saw it, wherever I could. And a bunch of the guys here, while I was gone to Seattle the first part of August, pulled massive amounts of knapweed, and in all the places where we like to be and where we walk frequently. And so getting that out of there so it doesn't helped a lot to make this place much more pleasant. It was awesome. So yeah.
Right. Well, and I think wherever there's knapweed, it's like that's where we don't yet have a permaculturalist. And it was kind of like, it is kind of funny how there was a bit of it around here at base camp, but probably a good 70% of it got buried under the berms. Yeah. And so then it's gone. And you think about it, it's like, well, if you put in a hookah culture bed, you're not going to have knapweed anymore. It gets buried. And then you plant a bunch of other stuff. And then if you ever see a knapweed plant pop up, you're probably going to pull it. Because knapweed is allelopathic, it exudes niacin out of its roots and kills surrounding plants, and so you don't. It's not a guild plant. It tries to kill, poison all the other plants, right, and create a knapweed monocrop.
Right.
So it's not a permaculture plant. So it seems like it would be eliminated out of your zone one, but I kind of feel like the reason why we still had knapweed here is because we really hadn't been growing a zone one. Mm-hmm. It's just a great big chunk of rock. In fact, where the double wide is, it's like they chiseled out a place for it.
Oh, I think they probably had to blast. They probably had to use something to blast it with.
And so then it's like, you've just got this solid rock where maybe some dust blew in from far away and accumulated in a quarter-inch thick layer, and then the knapweed's trying to make a go of it on that. And knapweed does very well in a desert environment. And so I kind of feel like with the fact that there was nothing else that we were trying to grow, because it's just rock, then no one was like feeling like gardening. But now we have in the berms, but it's like the berms still haven't really been finished.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like it's hard to like get into that gardening spirit when it's like, oh, yeah, if you plant a garden in that, as soon as the dump truck is ready, we'll bury your garden as we complete the berm.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's hard to want to plant there. So I think that now we can start getting into this space of gardening and having a zone one. And then I think the knapweed will be kept out because, you know, it doesn't fit with our guilds.
Yes. Yes. And we're, we've already started comfrey and all kinds of things in there that we can chop and drop a little easier to start mulching out places too. Yep. Yep. It's that. We went through the list.
That's the whole list. That's it. You got anything else?
Oh, man. I think that was, what, two-parter, three-parter?
I don't know. It'll be a while. It's, there was a lot to cover. And we'll see if we get back to things. I mean, we were talking about doing another chapter in Gaia's Garden, but I kind of felt like, oh, we should mention a couple things about what's happened since the last podcast.
I'd mention a couple things. Yeah. Then you had a page and a half list.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm sure that there's probably... We probably are only scratching the surface of the things to cover.
Yeah, I think people like the idea of hearing about the community, hearing about some of the mistakes. Quite a few people have said, I really want to hear about the mistakes people make because then I can learn from yours.
I think we're pretty good about sharing our mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
Usually.
I mean, open about all of it.
I kind of feel like there's a couple of mistakes that have been made where they involve other people to the point that I don't want to really share those.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's no reason to, you know, do that. So, but I do think that, like with the compost hot water, I mean, we talked about what did not work and why and how we rebuilt it and went from there. Mm-hmm. And, it's been working amazingly well now, but anyway, I think we've covered that well enough, but people want to hear about the mistakes, and I think we've covered that pretty good. I'm trying to think, like, is there something we've left out? I know there's tons of stuff we've left out, tons of details about tons of things.
Well, I think we skimmed the surface of a lot. I mean, and even didn't even skim. We went into a lot of different things. And I'm just trying to think of what you're going to call this podcast and your tagline at the end.
Yeah,
so that's kind of where I'm going. It's a lot of community stuff. Really?
You know, I got interviewed the day before yesterday and yesterday, and it was just a general permaculture interview, and 3/4 of each of the interviews were about community.
Wow.
They were both very interested in my community stuff.
Wow.
And, I know we've covered community a lot in the previous podcasts, and I think that the bottom line is that at this point in time, the amount of drama, and really it's drama. It's, you know, when you think back on like, well, why don't we still live like we did, you know, in college when 5 of us all rented a house, you know, that was so cheap. Why don't we keep doing that? And it's like, because of the drama and because of like, you get together with those guys and, they all want to just get drunk every fucking night. And it's like, you know, and after a while you're just like, I can't do this anymore. And or it's like, you know, one guy and his girlfriend are screaming at each other and breaking dishes. Those are my fucking dishes. What the fuck? And so it's like, the drama comes in infinite flavors and it just goes on and on and on. So that would be the reason why people don't go back and live like they did in college. It's like, boy, it's so nice to get away from it. But at the same time, it's like, what are the perks of community? And I mean, like, boy, you know, game night damn near every night and campfires and the music and not to mention the amount of information that's exchanged over the meals. And if you're going to buy a tractor, if you've got 20 people living under one roof, you automatically get the 95% off discount as the expense gets distributed between everybody. And, well, not in our case exactly. But the key is that the benefits of living, you know, in a group are tremendous. And all you got to do is be able to get rid of the drama. And I think we haven't gotten rid of it, but we've reduced it to being just 1% of what it is in other communities. I think. That's my impression.
Well, you mitigate so much of it by being the evil dictator or by being the consensus dictator's hybrid. So people bring their issues to you and you listen to people's issues for hours. You really do. Hours each week. You have listened to people's issues and...
I thought you were going to say hours each day.
Sometimes. Yeah. Some days. And you come up with solutions and are a problem solver. And then, you know, if it's an issue between more than one person, you listen to each of them individually and sort it out and find a solution. And you have been incredibly patient and understanding and supportive in that process. I mean, you'll come down pretty hard with a solution like, okay, that means this person can never touch X. Just, they can't. They are never to touch X again, you know. But it's a type of mediation that is and problem solving that's been very effective here. I just wanted to give you a shout out.
I think it's like the other side of it is if you're not going to do consensus and you're going to do that, I mean, that's the only way it'll work. Oh. Is that instead of having everybody talk to everybody, then everybody talks to one person. And so then I think if you've got 20 people, I think that works out to be something like 200 relationships. So that's 200 discussions that need to happen. Whereas if you've got 20 people and one of those people is in charge, then that's 19 discussions that have to happen. So it's optimized.
That's a really good way to put it. I hadn't thought of it that way before. I'd been feeling for you and thinking, wow, this is taking a lot of your time to listen to every issue that somebody brings. And for the most part, you know, we're solving our pig bucket things as best we can. So there's less and less issues as people come on board and figure out, oh, this is how we do it here. There's less and less people sitting in here giving you their stuff. So yeah, community stuff. It's big.
Yeah, I you know, it's getting better. It's getting better, but even more than that, I think the most important part is that we have just a tiny bit of drama compared to other communities that I've visited, that you and I have visited together, and then throw in my knowledge of community-esque things like being in college and sharing a house with a whole bunch of people. And, you know, why didn't you do the dishes and whatever? So I feel like we, you know, in the house, we run a pretty tight ship and that helps, you know, and you have to with this many people. And of course, the other thing is that with what we're going to be, with what we're shooting for, with what we're building, which we're making very good velocity towards, I think everybody wants to be here for that. Somebody said something about everybody wants to be there when you recreated the Kramaderhof. Mm. But nobody wants to be there during the construction of it.
Yeah.
You know, and at this, so I just kind of keep thinking to myself you know, we're going to get to that point in time where suddenly, I don't know, 2,000 people a year want to come out here. And we're going to say, we'll allow, I don't know, 20 visitors, but we're full up with the people that were here at the beginning, you know, and maybe we'll get an opening each year or something. But yeah, right now we don't have a lot of money or anything like that. And it looks like right now outside this window, it looks like a construction zone, which is extremely unfortunate and drives me nuts.
Yeah.
And I am so glad that we're starting to move into this phase of beauty and art. And it's like, let's make this nice. Let's finish this fucking berm outside this window. We just need the excavator to run again. We got two dump trucks now. So I think that the people that are here now are the people that will be here later. And when later happens and then everybody wants to be here, sorry, we're full. So this is the time. This is when it begins. And think about what we have here. I mean, when we arrived, it was just a double wide, a garage, a shop, and then a little ways away, 200 acres of raw land. And so it's been a little over a year now. A year and 2 months? And I kind of feel like now, not only do we have stuff to show for it, but we've got a strong forward velocity, and we're gaining speed. I think we're accelerating, and coolness is showing up rapidly, just all the time. All the time.
That's a good segue.
Yeah, so there you go. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about coolness, homesteading, and permaculture
all the time.